Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game. In this episode, Craig Joyce and Greg Patterson have a chat with national goalkeeping coach and club coach mentor, Fraser Stewart.
Fraser, Greg, thanks for joining us in the podcast. How are you?
All good, very good.
Very well, thank you.
Brilliant. Fraser, let's jump right into it. Where did you start your coaching journey?
See, before we do jump into it, I'd like to ask him how he's enjoying the previous podcast, because if you remember, he saw us going to record last week.
I've not had a long enough car journey yet to listen to it.
That's how you got.
I've listened to a few. There's been the odd one or two when I've had the long journeys up and down the roads.
Good.
He did say episode one was boring, didn't he?
Aye.
He says he turned that off.
Oh, we'll see how this goes.
Did it start for you, mate?
Aye, coaching journey was, funny enough, when I was still playing, when I was up at Aberdeen, Jim Leighton actually used to get us to go into the academy some nights and help him in there. So actually just for when I was, God, a young, trying to make my way just as a player, you actually started, Jim had us in working as, and then just in the academy, and what it was at that point, and just kind of starting for there, then just, you found a wee enjoyed it, and just for that point, it was all different experiences that came, so.
Was that when you started your badges? Did you start them straight away?
Or I actually did. Aberdeen put us through it. It was when we were young apprentices. You did your kind of level one, and they used to do it with a kind of local football development group. I think it was Neil Simpson that actually ran it at the time, and they took us a kind of couple of afternoons. We would go and do it. Sometimes in the car park at Aberdeen, we would actually do our coaching badges. So that's where the kind of initial badges started then.
I've never seen a coaching badge in my life.
Everybody
always refers to them as a badge, but I've never seen a badge in my life.
At that point, it was a big, massive certificate.
It was, wasn't it?
That's right.
Big certificate, and then we go back before his time with the VHSs that we love to talk about in the books.
I had a couple of them, aye, definitely.
So Neil Simpson would have been the development officer up in Aberdeen.
Simpson was the development officer then, aye.
Good.
So it's interesting to see the ones that were there at that time all kind of move. They're all kind of heavily involved
in the academy now.
But no, Aberdeen were good that way, where they actually quite encouraged you to kind of help in that way.
So what age were you when you moved up to Aberdeen then?
I'd just turned 16.
Right.
So just finished fifth year at school. The usual one, you get told in January you were getting a contract, kind of switched off with school, went to some exams, then they go to others. And then that was it. You just went up there in the June, I think. Went up with the old man, took us up in the car, and then that was us, left us.
Dumped you and left you?
Aye. With a wee, there was four days in this wee kind of, this kind of host family, just kind of rented out rooms, stayed in King Street, just up for Pittodrie. And I think there was four days in this wee kind of odd wee room where you just had a bed, a sink, everything, and that was you. It was like a kind of communal kitchen. And then they kind of stayed in one of the floors as a family. It was good. It was actually good for growing you up anyway.
Who else were you in with then? Can you remember?
So there, aye. So there was myself, Michael Payton, Chris Maguire, and Neil McVitie. That was the four years.
The four.
Aye, four kind of Glasgow.
Aye,
Glasgow-based ones. Aye.
Guys, aye.
Aye. Aye. Then my second year, I moved. Further in, Union Grove, I think it was called, and we get split up a wee bit. Whether that was because it caused too much mayhem, I don't know, but the family didn't want to keep us on.
Keep me full together.
So we kind of split up, and it was myself and Mick Payton moved into Union Grove. The two of us were in there, which was quite good. It was Lee Mayer's auntie or something, or a relative of Lee Mayer anyway.
Right.
They kind of ran, they were really good. I think they'd done it previously, then come back and do it, so it's quite good. They were good experiences, actually.
No, you're still a kid though, but as you say, it helps you. Helps you grow up.
No, definitely. Aye, they were good. Definitely that age where you're kind of getting in training, and then just everything else that comes with it. You were going home at that time. We were always into kind of 4 or 5 o'clock, and it was just how you fill up what you do it. So there was always a great wee. Right at the front of Aberdeen, where the kind of pier bit is, you've got the wee kind of pleasure beach type.
You're on the Cadonas, right? The Cadonas are called.
It was at the Puggies and the Dodgums and everything.
all the money from the Dodgers.
Watching the punters putting their money in the puggy, thinking, right, he's got to lose that soon. That's mine. That's mine. That's my shot.
Doing the still game on with Tam, just waiting until you come in.
Sitting waiting, everybody. You spoke about Jim Leighton there. As well as him, who else was your mentors? Who helped you through your journey?
It's funny, people would always... Obviously, you've got the likes of my old man, my dad, who's, you know, was massive in terms of goalkeeping in this country, but he kind of never really... It was the same with all three. He just let us be who we wanted to be, and the three is all kind of, don't get me wrong, we've all had a wee taste in football, calling more so, but we just kind of fell into it. And then I think I was very lucky in that he would take you into training at times when he was at Kilmarnock, and you would train with the likes of Gordon Marshall, who were great with you. They would take you to the side, they would do wee volleys with you or something, just to kind of involve you in things, and they were great, and you had an instant wee connection with them. I would go when I was at the 21s for a period of time. You would go and Jim Leighton would be about, and you'd meet these guys. And then I think when you started realising football could be a pathway for you, I was very lucky that Aberdeen treated me so well, in terms of Jim Leighton would come down for Aberdeen to Kilwinning and take me on a Thursday night sometimes. And then they found a goalie coach to do it more kind of week to week. But Jim would come down and take you. So it was things like that you kind of. That stuck with you.
That took that time.
If you were up in Aberdeen, why was there the need for?
So before I went up to Aberdeen,
before you were even
so Aberdeen used to have a centre in Hamilton. It was John Ward. If you ever come across wee John Ward for Greenock, he was a kind of one of Aberdeen's main scouts for the kind of Greenock area, Glasgow area. And wee John Ward was brilliant. He had a centre at Hamilton Palace. And then just the travelling for me, though, in times of trying to get there twice a week wasn't great. So then what they tried to do was they opened up a centre in Kilwinning, and there was a scout, Martin Boyd, at the time, one of Fleetsy's pals. He initially took me up to Aberdeen, and then what they'd done was Jim would come down maybe once a month and take me to Kilwinning.
Great.
And I would try as much as I could to get to Hamilton Palace, where it was Lindsay Hamilton, actually, took us. And Lindsay was great as well, to be fair. Lindsay was a real big help at that time as well. Just somebody that you could attach yourself to, that as you say, put value into what it was, which was, you know, as that young kid, I'd never really had goalie coaching. It was the usual, what was it called? It's not even there anymore. St Michael's Academy in Kilwinning, Gym Hall. You know, and it'd be five-a-side goals, and you'd have a crash mat, and that was your, you know, it was sure. People hitting shots here, you'd be doing whatever, and that was your kind of your goalie training. And then to actually, so then I think you attached yourself to those because they actually gave you something quite specific, and you really enjoyed it. You'd be diving about like a maniac, but you loved it because you'd never done it before.
Yeah. The crash mats never fit inside the goals, didn't they? No,
you'd always have that wee gap to always a wee gap to the post. You know, and you would try and just kind of dive and hold rather than just kind of glide along it.
Skelp right off the post.
Oh, aye.
Through the gap.
Mount of skint knees or elbows or whatever, and everything else, or you'd be on the red ash, and it was.
Aye, the old red ash.
You know, you'd be trying not to go in the shower. Don't you're trying to get the water not to touch a bit of skin. But oh wow!
You see red ash to people nowadays, and they've no clue.
Boys these days, they think a slide tackle on 3G is tough. You know, you think go back to the red ash or the sand-based Astros.
That was a layer off straight away, wasn't it? You never even get a grace
period. Oh, going.
So who were you playing with as a kid then? Before you went to Aberdeen. You're playing locally in Kilwinning, really?
Locally in Kilwinning. Mm-hmm. Aye, there was a guy, Jim McCubbin, ran our local team. He was one of the main founders at the Kilwinning Sports Club down there, kind of built it up. But he just ran a local team. Originally it was Ian Cashmore Senior started it.
Yeah.
So they started, I remember just going on Thursday nights to train at St Michael's Academy, and he took the team, and then it was that kind of where you never really played games, you just went and trained. And then eventually I think it went into whatever it was it Soccer Sevens or something then you went into? Mm-hmm. And we just formed a team out of it, I think the Durrans they were called. And I was with them for, God, it must have been the age of 8, 9 through to 15.
When you left?
Then when I left, aye. There was a few actually, it was boy Carl McGregor went to St Mirren. There was a couple other ones, went to other places as well, so there was a few that kind of...
Yeah, did you see your team, did you?
Aye. Well, at times I always remember my first ever 11-a-side game. We played, I think it was on Thank, we played 21-0. We get beat. But it's funny, the one we always joke about that is we get beat 21-0, and I got asked to sign with Rangers that day.
After it?
Aye, so it must have been
as a goalie.
Ball boy. it was good. They were good. I enjoyed that.
But that's got a story in itself for you now in your current role, surely, as you know, getting beat 21-0, but yet
I think I use it now when you look at kids' football, the scoreline sometimes are irrelevant. You're just looking for wee things. Mm-hmm. You know, the way they move, even if they have lost that amount of goals, is there a wee bit within them that still goes? They don't give up, that wee kind of thing. And absolutely, there is wee lessons you learn for your own experiences that you definitely look at, or I look at anyway.
Talking about that, what's your thoughts on the role of the modern day goalkeeper these days? Mainly because I'm thinking about the boy Ederson at Man City. He's different to what's normal.
It's funny because sometimes I toy with it in my own head. Whereas I look at when I come through, you'd no goalie training, so you train with outfield players, so you ended up learning how to pass the ball correctly or take a touch correct. All those wee skills that you maybe no learn if your time was taken up as. Yep. Doing goalie stuff all the time, whereas I think you've got to learn your own natural technique. Sometimes I look at some goalies and they're a bit too robotic. You're trying to shape them into something that's that makes them look robotic, and I think it's such a natural position at times that if you look at any goalkeeper across the world, any of the top goalies, for you're talking about Ederson there, you've got Alisson, you've Buffon, you've got De Gea, these guys, none of them are the same. You know, they've all got wee bits that are natural to them that they've developed themselves. Yep. You know, Neuer. You know, a lot of people talk to me about, oh, I want my 10-year-old kid to be like Neuer. That's not going to happen.
No.
You know, and a lot of people don't realise it was actually Neuer himself that decided he wanted to play like that. You know, and that's, I think what people need to realise is you've got to find yourself as a goalie first and foremost. And I found that even in those wee things in that Jim Honka winning, you find a natural way to, I think it's a natural thing as a person. You find a way to stop the shot, and then eventually, don't be wrong, there's somebody teaches you a wee bit, so certain bits of technique to do it, but the first and foremost is finding out how to do it first. But in terms of modern day, I think goalies now, I think it's changed slightly, and it coaches in terms of goalkeeping coaches have changed more to actually put in practices that work with, you know, the feet more and more now, because it is, that's where the more touches are coming from the feet than what is the hands, and that's where a lot of the kind of the interactions with the ball are coming from.
It's funny, I'm kind of, we've spoke previously on this podcast, Craigie, but I see a lot of the game now through the eyes of my son and daughters, or my sons and daughter, and we're at Ibrox on Sunday past there, and we were sitting behind the goal, and they were just, Daddy, what area is the goalkeeper? And you're saying, well, that's the 6-yard box, and that's the 18-yard box. So why is he standing, just like you're saying there, Fraser, why is he standing beyond that? Try and explain, obviously, where the ball might come over the top so he can go and sweep and blah, 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 blah. But it's just, you know, it's incredible to think that is now. You know, in that 20 years ago or 10 years ago, as you just said there, Fraser, the goalkeeper might have stayed in the box.
Well, I think,
and not come out, almost as if there's an electric fence there.
I think I remember talking to especially my old man about it when he played at times where the pass back rule had just, you know, just come in. So he used, there wasn't a lot of footage at that time, but he used to tell me stories where guys would just get in, they could just kick it straight. So you didn't really have to probably be as much a sweeper keeper as you probably people talk about now, where they could probably stay there, and if there's anything happening, it gets kicked back to them anyway, and they're using their hands. Whereas I think once the pass back rule came in, I think then you've seen the kind of progression of them coming further and further up into the game as such. I mean, nowadays it's incredible. Some of the ones you see, or some of the pictures you see, especially for games abroad, and you see some of the goalies, and some of them are actually going beyond players to go and actually be involved in things. You're going, wow. You know, if you had that over here, some coaches would have a heart attack.
Panic, innit? As soon as they leave the 6-yard box, it's panic. Like, what are you doing?
What even about the new kind of goal kick rule? You know, the passes, passing. Have you seen the Benfica one? Have you seen the Benfica footage? He flicks it up to the centre half.
Well, it's back to funny enough, I was talking with Brian McLaughlin the other day about it. I says, I've got one for you, and I do the wee clip for Twitter. You know, and he's maybe by his experiments at this time. But it's interesting just people try it, you know, because it was, I think they introduced it at the Women's World Cup, so that was where initially I thought, right, let's see. Not a lot of teams kind of used it to the advantage. I'm just interested to see how certain teams, more so the teams who are renowned for playing for the back, you know, and then again how certain teams actually set up to go against that. You know, would you go and put your players further up against them right on the 18, knowing that they can step in, or because it was funny, I was talking to Brian, especially that Benfica one where he chips it and heads it back. If they went and committed that many bodies, and it's the goalies then get the ball in his hands to go and dispose it.
I think he can dispose it well,
that longer way,
yeah, can catch them.
Yeah, but it'll be interesting definitely to see how, more so, as I said, the teams who are renowned for playing.
Out from the back.
Definitely, yeah.
I was watching the, I think it was a Celtic game last night, and the team they were playing, one of theirs went kind of right on the byline inside the 18, but he never gave him it. Mikey Johnson had kind of went right up as far as he could, but I was just into him watching. Oh, I wonder if he will, but they never played. It will be interesting to see.
It's risky as well, isn't it? Like if you think you get caught with that, you're,
that's what Fraser's are saying. If you go, you're banging really trouble. Them, yeah.
Imagine that against a Liverpool or something like that. Yeah,
especially those teams. Especially ones that have got that pace. As soon as you play that, you know, and that's, I think that's the thing that's hard with the young kids trying to do it. They don't realise that you only need a tiny wee bit of the pass not being right, and you're done. And that is the hardest part of it.
You see that all early game, wouldn't you? You chip into the hangman and back, you see people trying.
Funny, I remember even when I was a young kid coming through, and going from 7-a-side to 11-a-side was a nightmare. You know, the changing pitch, changing goal, the rule, everything was just so tough. And I was never run out great for distance and kicking. I just had the big lettuce thighs that you couldn't. Like if I got out the 18, I was delighted, you know. So honestly, we used to do that. So I used to just dink it, and the centre half would head it back, and I would catch it, and then I could kick it with my hands.
Brilliant.
And then you'd get maybe three or four of them, and then teams would come and stand at them, and then you're like, oh no, where am I going to go?
Where am I chipping this tonight?
Oh, aye.
Should be a big fan of the addition of the nine-a-sides then, are you, in the pathway?
Aye, I think it does help. It really does help. I remember speaking with Richie and the guys when Paul McNeil and that, when we were trying to form that, and there is a certain transition needed. Because to go for seven-a-side, where it's not a massive goal, but to go for that to 11 is, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. And I think as well that sometimes the flip side I look at that is to actually develop strikers in this country. When you put a small goal in an 11-a-side goal, it's easy to score a goal. Mm-hmm. So when the goalie actually becomes bigger, that striker's no really learned go and put it in the corner, mm-hmm. go and bend it away from them. They've just learned if you kick it high, it's a goal. So they'll just keep kicking it high and it's a goal, and they don't actually learn the art of finishing as such. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's one way I try and spin it with outfield guys is how that might help. Sometimes actually just using the 7-a-side goal because it is harder to score in it. But no, I'm certainly a big fan of the 9-a-side transition as such.
That is decent when you look at it though, isn't it? We done that during the week. Last week we played in a sevens tournament with the girls in the city.
Aye.
So we decided we'd just train all week in the sevens goal. And then we said, right, sevens goal's inside and we put the fours goal. You're only allowed to go corners. And you still see, I think the first one, it was like 30 shots on goal, 19 were off target.
Yeah.
Keeper saved a couple, and you're like, what he's doing? You don't need to put the laces through it every time and smash it. And then when they clicked on, and you think, you've been telling them this for 6-7 years, and now you put them back to 7-a-side goals after that's where they started, and they're like,
aye.
Well,
I think it's just because I totally agree with you, and it's be simple things like that. If you learn that art of finishing as early on as you can, I mean, some of the best finishers in the world, when you watch them finish, it's a side foot.
Aye.
You know, it's no, very rarely is it a struck,
and it's right in the corner.
Aye.
Isn't it? It's no,
aye. And they bend them away. And
Henri was great at that one.
Just caress,
bear caress, you know, these just side foot pass, it was in,
guided it right in the corners.
You know,
keep the same
one, magnificent at it.
Aye, he was good,
you know.
Hate to admit that, but he wasn't. That hurt me, that one there. I knew you were going to bring something like that. testing me there. No, you've had obviously had a chance to be on the courses, but what's it like flipping it and being the tutor on the courses?
I think it's totally different because I think when you're the candidate, your head's that scrambled with everything that's been flung at you. You're just trying to kind of piece together wee bits. Whereas I think when you're on the other side and actually trying to plan everything actually trying to find the bits of where you can challenge them, I think is the hardest bit as a tutor. On, especially for example, if I have somebody coming to me nowadays, if you look at the UEFA A licence we've got, or our goalkeeping licence, who's maybe been a top professional international goalkeeper, you know, you're trying to kind of bridge that gap. How can I challenge them? But there is, you know, because they've never coached before.
Yep.
And that's where you see the wee deficiency. So you're then trying to I like the fact because it's helping again. I think it's no dissimilar to actually just coaching a player. You're trying to find the bits where to spend time on the wee faults that you can see or where you can try to get them to improve, but certainly trying to plan everything. I think you then get a realisation of how much planning is into a course. Mm-hmm. You know, as a candidate, you turn up in the morning, you maybe get your session, a bit of stuff, you're away at night, you're gone. You know, whereas a tutor, I think you're constantly with the next bit. How do we make that better? How can we get that increased or whatever it is, or the planning that goes into it? I mean, we're planning the study visit at the moment coming up, and it's the amount of planning to go into that. It's 2 days, you know, it's 2 days for our course, but they'll turn up and go, and then they'll always go, "Ah, that wasn't good enough for that," and you're going, "All right, okay."
Sandwiches weren't great. That's what you get, isn't it?
Aye,
we spoke about that in A-licence, didn't we?
Aye.
About the planning that goes on behind the scenes and the candidates not really seeing it. And
there are, funnily enough, as Fraser was talking about the Celtic game in Europe last night, I was listening to the radio when I was out and about, and John Hughes was chatting about that. They were chatting about the documentary, The Fort, about the Fort William team.
I've not watched it either,
but they were chatting about that, and John Hughes was saying that, you know, regardless of what level you work as a coach, so even if you're the head coach of that Fort William team, he said that will occupy their entire life. Mm-hmm. You know, and he was talking last night in the radio about being with your family, and you're engaging with your family, yes, but your head's elsewhere. Your head's thinking about how can I tweak that to try and get that result. And I suppose for us in coach education, like Fraser's saying there, it's very much like, how can I make that course a little bit better to get more from the candidates, as Fraser says, to try and help them?
Definitely, and I think that's the... It's funny when you're saying that there about your head being elsewhere, and it is like that. You'll come in for... You know, maybe if you're saying, for example, you've been in a meeting, and then I think naturally as it is, your head starts thinking about something that's happened, and you're away, maybe back at home, you're doing something, but you're still thinking about that meeting because there's something to go, and I can get something of that, I can improve that, I just need to find a wee bit. But no... I think that's definitely the bit as a tutor's. Malky's always got a good one of talking about it. It's that kind of, you see the duck going along in the pond, but you don't see the feet, you know,
underneath.
You don't see the feet underneath going to try and get it to work. But that's certainly the biggest difference in terms of what I've noticed for all the levels of coach ed that I've done, for the level ones right through. And also actually the. I think even at the level one and two, see even just the impact you can have on coaches, you know, and the amount of times they have spoke away, a lot of them with the pathway stuff about problems they're having with young goalies, and actually realising the actual impact you can have on what they then go and do at their club. You know, I think if you just came, put on a course and left, if you actually make it a wee bit more personal and you spend time with the actual candidates on the course, I've noticed that a big value in that in terms
For a lot of them it's networking more than the course itself, isn't it?
You know, you'll show them stuff, you give them a booklet, great, but it's actually the more questions you get as a tutor, I think that's where the real kind of juice is in terms of the course, in terms of what they get out of it, you know, because anybody can go and set up a drill and let it flow the way it has to be, but what they actually get for your knowledge or the guys we've put in the course, I think that's where they pick things up.
I think that's what we were talking about earlier on with Jim Leighton and the value. You're putting the value back into the candidates, aren't you? And I think that helps. I found that in the A-licence as well a lot with the tutors. Yeah. They were all great at that.
A lot of people sometimes ask you, "What's it like working with Jim Leighton?" But sometimes it was just actually Jim taking to the side for a chat. Mm-hmm. Was it actually what the value you put most? That he spends that time, he noticed, you know, I went through a tough time at Aberdeen, he noticed you were having a tough time, so he takes the time to speak to you, and God, the experiences he had in his career, you know, what he went through at Man United, and et cetera, then that, you know, he's got a wealth of experience here to just impart on you. And sometimes it was just a period of him going, "Look, just relax." You know, whereas you're that young pro, you're desperate for everything to come now, and he's just going, "Relax." You know, you're seeing, at that time they had Peter Keir, Danish goalie, there was Ryan Essien, there was David Priest. You're seeing these guys being able to do things, you're going, how can I do that, or not do that, and sometimes just a bit of strength that you've not got. You know, I just went up there as a big lanky, strongy boy who had no strength whatsoever, so, and that was one of the big differences, you know, the power that these guys are hitting shots at. You're lucky if you're saving one or two and shooting, the rest are flying by and you're going, "Oh my God, I've not made a save today."
But the power.
The power. Mm. The pace of the ball is just, And that's always the thing that when I speak to young goalies now, if they've had a wee chance of getting up with a first team, what's the big difference? The pace, quickness, power on the shot. And it's just strength, you know.
The kind of flip side of that, I remember being a young player at Celtic, 16 years old, and every Friday when the first team finished, we would always help Packy.
Yep.
Shooting practice. So we'd lift the goal all the way over to the far side at Barrowfield, and then we'd get some shooting practice. And you know, there was me and another kind of three or four strikers or whatever, would go out and just do shooting for them.
Aye.
The day before the game. And you'd hit the ball with all your might. You'd put everything you could behind that ball, and it would just be one big hand for Packies. And he would look at you as if to say,
to be fair, it's a big hand to try and beat.
It's a big hand. It's all you've got. And you just think, I've tried everything I possibly can to put as much power behind that ball, and still it was just, you know, as a 15, 16 year old, to being a first team player was just chasms of.
Aye. As when you say that, when we were at Ackies, we had Davy McCune. You remember Davy McCune?
Aye.
Like Davy was in goal, and he's just terrifying to look at, to be honest with you. Cracking big guy, but
aye.
He used to take
he did have that about him.
It was like, would do a bit of finishing, and you're thinking, oh God, I don't want to score into him. He's got a choke slam me or something, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you were terrified, but he was a cracking big guy, and he never bothered, but he used to just take you away, and we were the same, just go and smash it. Leather at top, man. You've seen somebody for the first team doing it, let's go and do it. And
aye.
We never had the power in our legs to do it.
But as Fraser says as well, even, you know, even looking back on it, Packy never had to do that on a Friday afternoon.
No.
You know, he never
he
had,
it.
You know, and that's it's those little bits of senior pros that still, help the young guys.
I know, I still remember, God, going back to Aberdeen, there was a lot of good senior pros at that time. I still remember going out in some of the afternoons, and I think Craig Brewster used to take wee bits of set, and he was brilliant. You know, he would do a lot of stuff with strikers and stuff like that, with the young strikers, but it was great even for me as a goalie, because you would listen to what he's saying.
Aye.
So he's asking him for certain movements, and he does that, where they're aiming in the goal. So then as a goalie, you're starting to go, right, if he's in that type of position, the pitch is that where they're, so you're trying to read their movements on the pitch. And it was good for me for the other side, you know, for what Craig Brewster was saying to strikers, you're going, right, how would I then counter against what he's asking? Sandy Clark was good. God, he had a mountain of finishing drills he used to do with the guys, and it was great for us. You would just be, you know, as a young boy at 15, I think sometimes academies now have lost that bit because they're so big. You know, at that point clubs were smaller, where we trained with the first team every day. You know, and the access you had to Jim Leighton, to the first team goalies, to the actual first team pool of players was incredible. You know, they trained right next to you, or you're involved in training. Whereas these days it's totally different. Squads are bigger, there's academies, there's whatever else in the way. Some are still the same, but I think that was just,
never thought of that.
As an experience
back,
as a young kid, like,
right.
You know, we used to train at Barrowfields or the Barracks, and you were always with them. You would go early, build the goals for them, set their stuff up, and then you would do your training, or Jim was brilliant. We would always be in with Jim, very rarely were we not, and then it would be, sometimes the first team needed the four goalies because they were doing small series games, so you were involved with them, and that was the way it was. And then you'd always go in the afternoon with the youth group, or as well at Aberdeen, the old cricket pitch across the road. So we used to even just take a goal over there and just put the goal up, and the boys would do shooting and different things. It was
Big Packy used to get us build the goals up, and everything, you know, that far away part of Barrowfield, as I said. And you go way back to the changing rooms, and you just hear us, or a big whistle or something. What's going on? And we would go all the way back out. That's not where I wanted them. And they would honestly get you to move them an inch, just to wind us up, you know. And then, well, bloody hell, all the way back to the changing room.
Quite a joint at Barrowfield as well.
It was good for the step count at the time, but there was no Fitbits or anything like that.
I don't get Fitbits, your legs just feel it. You're talking about that there. What was the experience like for you going in with the first team? Like, as a young kid, you're going in there with the likes of Jim Leighton and stuff like that.
I mean, because Aberdeen at that time, Jimmy Calderwood, my first proper season, Jimmy Calderwood came in, and it was a kind of almost what they're going through now with Derek McInnes, in terms of they had a whole kind of lift, and well, Jimmy got them into Europe, he had them going well, and he had some really top pros there at the time, and it was a good first team, and it was tough for a young goalie, tough. I mean, I used to, no lie, I used to go in, I'd have horrific days, you'd mistakes everywhere, you'd players shouting at you, and you're going, oh my, how? And it was just that, I think that's where you find your character as a person. You just go back again and go back again. And I only got a small snippet of it because about a couple of months in, I broke my wrist, so I was out of it again for going about 9 months, on and off, had different problems, and then I think it wasn't until the following season I eventually got myself back, and then you were back in training again. But the same problems there, mm-hmm. I hadn't had, because as a goalie, you know, different if it's an outfield player and you've broke your wrist, you'll strengthen everything up. Whereas a goalie, your main strength's going to come for your top half, mm-hmm. you know, probably some of your legs, definitely, but I couldn't strengthen that, or you could strengthen one side, but mm-hmm. I couldn't strengthen the area that to get you stronger to go into a first team and compete, I couldn't do it. So you were then away back at the start again, kind of 9 months, 10 months later.
Just hitting the reset button. And
reset button again. It was as if you were only just back in, mm-hmm. For a young schoolboy to take him back into the first team again, and the same problems. And then eventually you kind of found yourself through time. I mean, I think it took me for coming back for the injury to say that was about maybe the September, October time. I think until about April before I actually felt I was starting to make saves. I was starting to not make as many mistakes in the wee games, or show myself that I had value within that area. But again, as you speak about Jim coming to speak, I still remember guys like Russell Anderson mm-hmm. being good wee in terms of, look, don't worry about it, you know, because at the end of the day they're playing for a place in the first team, their livelihoods are there, their appearance fee, their bonuses, so they're desperate to do well. So that's why you can see there's such a competitiveness within their training that's probably sometimes no as much there as the youths, and that's one of the main differences. And as a young goalie, you're getting in causing a team goals and they're getting beaten. You know, I remember days where Richie Foster would be in your face and he's running it and you're going, right, well, just keep it together, deal with this, and then you would throw it out straight to a striker again and he'd score and you're going, oh my god. But guys like that are invaluable. Just take you to say, like, relax, don't worry about it. You know,
must be quite mentally draining on you as well.
Can be, aye. But again, that's, I always remember guys. Ryan Essam was brilliant. Before he left, he would say, just go into the gym, mm-hmm. take all your anger out in the gym, just go into the gym for half an hour and just batter whatever exercise you think, and it would be great if you would do that, mm-hmm. you know, and you'd feel yourself come out and go, right, no, I'm alright, you know. And I think that's something I kept with me for somebody just saying that to you. And again, he'd experienced it, he'd been a young kid at Aberdeen, come right the way through to playing the first team, so you're going to listen to him, mm-hmm. and the fact that he's done it, he's been through every feeling you've felt, he's been there. Probably worse for him, the fact he was a local boy. So
good to see him back on courses now then for you.
It is, aye. No, definitely. Last kind of, especially more so coming in full time here, and you kind of meet these guys again, and it's good to catch up with them. And now seeing him in the terms of being a coach side of things, it's good. And Ryan's actually one of the better ones, because he's actually went and been, I think he actually assists or takes the 18 side as well.
Right, okay.
So he's kind of went full on into it. But he's always good. He's always good for a text message or a phone call for moaning about something. But he's you know, he's good. He's good. But again, certainly one of the ones that definitely helps you in your journey. And you think back now, the things I then tell the young goalies now, it's no any different to the things they were telling me. Mm-hmm. You know, and you keep that, you store that, and you use it at the right time.
Pass it on.
Aye, and it's amazing that people talk about how much the game's changed, but the actual information you're getting, people's the same. In my view, anyway, it's
information. And developers, people, is the same things, all-rounder.
Exact same things that they told me at that time that I'm telling the young ones now.
Speaking about Ryan going into assist the 18s and stuff, you ever thought about that yourself, or has it always just been?
No, I did. I mean, funnily enough, when I kind of came to the end, once I'd finished kind of into the juniors for a period of time. And when I stuck kind of at juniors and I was working at Rangers at the time, mm-hmm. we were all manning that. And funny enough, when I used to go away, they'd done the overseas stuff. Sometimes I have a goalie group, sometimes I have players, and I actually really enjoyed the players' stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was well before the course got designed into being what it is now, with that kind of transition of working with both mm-hmm. outfielders and goalies. But if I got a group, I used to always go away and see if there was a wee goalie in the group, and I would try and come up with something that mm-hmm. would look after the players but look after the wee goalie. And I enjoyed having to think like that.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of started me going, no, I quite enjoyed doing the outfield coaching. And then from there, I remember helping Craigie Hamilton with the women's team at Cowinning for a couple of sessions, and I used to do the girls under, I think they were 14s or something at the time. I remember taking them for a couple of games, and I actually really enjoyed that side of it. And then in the juniors, as I got lower down, I left Cowinning Rangers and played with the local amateur team at Cowinning, and then there was a bit of kind of and how stuff the manager left, and we were kind of left with 6 inning games a season. It was nobody. So I ended up taking a team with one of the guys, and it was great. I really enjoyed it and found a kind of different bit and how you could try and adapt things. And you know, amateur football sometimes rough and tussle, but you manage to get a couple of wee things. And then from there I went and joined an old manager at Muir Kirk and was kind of player coach, and again really enjoyed that. Hard, because you're maybe, he's asking you to speak in front of the players, and you've maybe had a nightmare in the first half, and you're actually telling boys, and you can see them looking, going, oh wait a minute,
just, you know, so
it was an experience. I then go, no, if it, I don't think I would do player coach. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you're either a player or you're a coach.
Yeah.
Because I think there's just so much, and I think even for learning for one of my old managers at Quinnan Rangers, Chris Strain, he was player manager, and I remember looking at him, and he used to be barking orders for the sideline and this and that, and then he would come on the pitch and do the same, and you're going, I just don't think, no, you lose a bit of respect, but you, it's not the same
as
having
a different
aye, aye. And I think you cause yourself more problems. But no, in terms of outfield stuff, and then for there, same thing happened. The manager left Muir Kirk, and I ended up taking them for a game, and again, even at that level, really enjoyed it, really enjoyed the whole trying to piece together a team and training and how that all unfolds. I really enjoyed it. There's always been a wee kind of bit of me enjoys that outfield side of it. I think as well, I think in terms of coaching, because of your experiences of you call it marshalling a back four, of putting people in positions and organising things, I think when it comes to coaching, you generally have those qualities of organising things, because that's been your career in terms of organisation and using your voice and how you manipulate certain things to get people to do things for you. So I think a natural progression is to do that, and I think that because a lot of the time you watch the game, you see certain things. So I think goalies are always great for knowledge in terms of what they see, and it's a totally different view of what you see that you're talking about when you sat behind the goal at Ibrox. You know, it's a totally different view for what you get on the side of the pitch. And sometimes it's just good to get that different
perspective
on things. Aye, absolutely.
Do you find yourself watching games as a coach now, or is it?
Aye. I think now, definitely now, totally different. You know, funny, the first time I ever came to work with the squads, I tell this in Coach Ed all the time. So when I was working at, I think it was Rangers at the time, I'd been at the academy at Rangers, and I think I became, probably stale is the right word, like you just get into a lull of working with the goalies, and that's fine, and you'd be frustrations, or you'd want to help with outfield stuff, but maybe the opportunity wasn't there, and you were just kind of, right, I'll just do the goalies. You'd watch games and it was just bypassing you, and that was fine. And the opportunity came to work with Scott, I think it was under 17s at the time, and it was incredible. Just opened my eyes. Scott was sitting on the bench, and the game had only just started a couple of minutes, and Scott turned to me and he says, what are you thinking about them? And I'm not joking, I was like, aye, they're decent. You know? and it was after the game, he says, look, I didn't mean to put you in the spot there, just I like my coaches to be, and for that moment on, I've made sure that will never ever happen again. You know, I think I've got a great relationship with the coaches now, in terms of Brian, Stuart, Starkey, Scott, Shelley, when I've worked with the women's team, that you add value, that you go and watch. You know, don't get me wrong, we've got set things now with the squads, that you've got a job. When it's wee Brian, I think it's, I look after what our team's doing in terms of our shape, Joel look after what the opposition are doing, but that's something that I'd never been asked to look for. And it's always something I say to the goalie coaches now, is just be prepared for, because at any point a coach who is open-minded to ask you that thing, I don't always remember, I think Rab Geddes speaks about it as well, sometimes you've got to be ready for that happening. And it was just, thankfully Scott didn't close off to me at that point. You know, some coaches at that point would go, that's your chance, it's gone. Whereas Scott was great, he kind of explained, look, this is what I'm looking for, and we've got a great relationship now where I do those sort of things for him. But that was the kind of first experience of we speak about that a lot, of do you still watch the game as a player, or do you now watch it as a coach? And I think that's a big transition for player to coach, on how you actually watch the game. And I think now I get to a point where you actually miss, the way I look at it now, you actually miss what happens in an attacking sense for your team. You've missed a goal because you're making sure
other else
are they covered,
is
the goalie where I've asked them to be, are the defenders where they are, have they covered, you know, the double covered in the middle of the pitch, is all that set up, are we ready for the counter? And then you've no seen what's happened. You miss the best bit at times, but at the end of the day, that's your job come the game. So no, that was my harsh reality into Scott Gemmell's
on the spot thinking. What's it like working with them guys at international level?
Excellent. I mean, they're so open in terms of, but challenging at the same time, and I just think they're just relaxed about everything. Very simple, you know, all about the players, and they're just great guys to work with. There's, you know what it's like, everybody works with coaches that they take wee bits from, but all of them I think are very similar in the way they work, and they're just dead relaxed, and their organisation, you know, the amount of input they put into things, detail in terms of analysis and tactics and what they go into is impressive at times. And again, that all filters for what Malky asks them to be like. I think since Malky's come in, he's really driven the standards in terms of how we set up our week to the game, to everything else. So, but all of them, Shelley as well, you know, so detailed in everything that they're trying to do. And it's been great for me as a coach, not only just in the goalkeeping sense, but as just a footballing coach, yeah, to take wee bits. You know, you take wee bits for all of them. Mm-hmm. There's so many things I've learned from Scott to Brian to Stuart, Starkey, Shelley, Malky as well. You know, you just pick up loads and loads of wee bits and you write them down, you keep them for whenever you think they're needed. But they're all fantastic.
And then you go for a Sunday roast with the family and you've got your dad and Tom and
then it starts a lot, you know. Well, I can actually say that now, all our wives now will probably go off their nut because everything's football chat. You know, you've got the glasses moving, you've got the pepper salt moving, the tomato ketchup's a striker, and the brown sauce is a defender, and what's happening here. Or Natalie's always good for morning because the amount of time I must spend on the phone to calling her, my old man going down the road, it's incredible. But you're just chatting. And again, actually, when you're saying they're using calling for the exposure he's now got, mm-hmm, to guys like Stephen, mm-hmm, Gerrard, Michael Beale, Gary McAllister, incredible, you know, he asked wee bits. Mm-hmm. We actually went and met as a group of staff, national coaches, we went and met with Michael Beale just before the start of the summer there, and he was brilliant in terms of what he showed us in terms of...
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
Aye, because it was just a game we watched and we noticed a wee change in our tactics and we just wanted to know how did that happen, why did it come about, and it was, again, for us, learning, you know, just a different wee slant on things, and it was great.
Craig is the son of Michael Beale. The way he goes on about Michael, he is just can't see no further than Michael Beale, can you?
Nah. Posters all over.
He's a be all and end all.
Yeah, that's for you, isn't it?
But no, I must say,
fantastic.
In terms of, you think of clubs at that level, sometimes they're no one to show you everything, but he came with, it was an open book to everything they'd done at Rangers, and it was incredible. And really well done to him for the fact of just how open he was and spoke,
yep,
really honestly about the problems they had, the problems they faced, what they tried to do, what they're going to try and do this year. So it'll be good to watch him and see how they go
on.
No, he was great, he really was good.
I think it goes back to what you said earlier, it's in networking as well within coaching, mm-hmm, isn't it? It's not just about the it's massive, and I think a lot of people don't value that side of it. They just go and do their courses or whatever, well, and don't really talk to anybody and stuff. And
similar to that, one of the concepts we've done with the performance coaching side of things, I think they've spoke that in one of the podcasts before, so we've got these concept of Pride Labs where we have coaches coming together, and I'm a massive fan of it because the amount of help it's offered in terms of just the goalkeeping coaches, I think I'm quite lucky compared to the other two in terms of Stuart and Starkey. They look after the children's group and the youth group. The amount of experience I've got with the majority of them, the heads of goalkeeping tend to be the first team goalie coach, mm-hmm, so the amount of experience that's in the room that I have, and to actually see them just help each other is incredible. Yeah, you know, for different wee bits are faced, and then it could just be you start on one wee topic and then eventually you just see the wee sparks going off in the room, and somebody's got this problem, I've had that problem, I've got the same thing, well, I've tried this, I've tried that, and then before you know it they've went away and they're sharing things with each other, and I don't think that's happened in Scottish football for, mm-hmm, as long as I've known it. It's been really, really good.
I've kind of coined this phrase recently, Craig, you'll have heard me use it on the A-licence as well in the summer, turbocharging. Mm-hmm. Turbocharging your learning, and that's essentially what's happening through Pride Labs, what we're trying to do through the A-licence, what, yep, we're trying to do through all these courses, mm-hmm, what you're essentially doing with your family dinner on a Sunday night. You know, you're turbocharging your learning because you're involved in that network, you know, as much as you possibly, yep, can be, and, yep, just constantly getting information from somewhere.
I think that's where social media is great as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It can be.
I think you need to be careful with it at times, because some people take, you know, you see some people that have got 72,000 followers and you have a wee look at stuff and you think
I think as well with social media you try and kind of speak to people about more so if they're seeing something and you're going right okay, and some people try and replicate it and it's you get it in a course and you go right where's
context,
that, where's that
the context
from?
Of
and
what
I've seen it on YouTube but I've seen it and you're going okay, but you need to know
the context
why
of that
session on that day because it'll be a you know, and it's I think that's where you've just got to get the balance right, but there certainly is a lot of great
definitely it needs to be relevant to what you're doing as well, don't it? You can't just as you say take it and then you can see it and then 2 seconds later they'll move on to something totally different that's not relevant to the first bit.
See when you see the more educational ones that are maybe explaining at the start, but when you're just actually seeing a clip of footage you've got to try and understand why is that happening, what, you know,
definitely
what point in the season or what is he trying to get out of it or whatever it may be.
What's it like working alongside this guy?
Great, to be fair,
this guy sitting across me, what's he like?
He's been really good in terms of quite challenging to a point in terms of actually just saying go and come up with things. He's been great in terms of, I think, don't be wrong, I really need to thank what was in place before I come in here in terms of what Donald and Paul Mathers and my dad had put in place for me to come into was a fantastic setup to come into in terms of that was practically ran itself. The amount of work that you guys put in, and then with Greg coming in, myself coming in no long after, it's actually worked quite well in terms of having myself inside to just actually, I'll send him texts, what about this, what about that, or he'll send me things that he sees elsewhere, could you do something this, that, and I think what you're starting to see now is at the start of our first time ever a kind of proper CPD programme for goalie coaches, what there hasn't been. And we just keep sharing ideas of how could we do with that. That one went well, it's been great, it's been well received. I mean, I think we're talking about, we've had 3 events and you're talking about over 250 to 300 coaches have attended them, so it's been well received. And it's, but the challenge again is to go another step further and how can we get something else. But no, he's been great.
I think
he's
what's
been
happened
good.
There, is, as Fraser's kind of alluded to, is that kind of goalkeeping fraternity, and it's trying to keep them... Try to keep them together. It's almost try to bond them together, and they do that well. The goalies like to sit about and talk. Perhaps I've noticed a lot when involving goalkeeper coach education, they like to sit around and chat, perhaps more than your kind of general outfield coach would. So they'll sit and they'll chat about it more. So you can kind of, as I've just said, you can kind of turbocharge that almost, and you can give them more opportunity to do that. And as well as we've mentioned Big Packy a couple of times already in this episode, and you know, Packy in his role working as a UEFA goalkeeping consultant, of course still living in Glasgow and still, and you know, getting on well with Fraser's dad, and then of course me knowing him from the day I worked in Ireland and everything like that as well. So that all kind of boils down to the coaching convention last year added in an extra 5 hours of CPD for qualified goalkeeping coaches. So not only do they do the normal 15 hours, they must do this added five hours. So as Fraser said there, you know, it's now about giving them that opportunity to do that added 5 hours, but not just 5 hours, you know, 25 hours, I think
that's
Fraser, if they want.
The biggest thing that I've found has been actually, you know, they would only need to go to one event, generally, a year, you know, and they'll get their 5 hours quite easily, or the Pride Labs, but they actually, they come to every event, you know, and that's what's...
And it's building that fraternity.
I think there's a group forming there where they want to come, they want to see it, you know, the feedback has been great, and they're all sending different things in. Some of them send wee ideas in, what about this, and it's been really good. But getting back to what you're asking me about McGregor, it's just been good because he's just kind of allowed me to go and have a look at everything, see what you want to do, and then there'll be some things where I've thought, what about this, what about that, and then he'll go away and come back to me, or vice versa, and some things we both agree, no, that wouldn't work, but I think it's good. We got on well enough that everything to this point, touch wood's went to plan.
Long may it continue.
Aye. Absolutely.
What about we were speaking briefly about the new goalkeeping coaching course that yous are coming up with. Did yous get any intel, is there anything you can talk about?
I can give it a good plug here.
It's kind of came from, I think we've been fortunate in this country that we've actually been ahead of the game in terms of UEFA. You know, we've been that far ahead that it's causes a tiny wee problem in terms of how we manoeuvre it into our pathway. By getting the UEFA A as early on as we did and having the pathway we've had, it's kind of went so far to the elitist side. We've kind of left that kind of middle group where coming out of our own national licence into the UEFA A, there was a fair amount of gap. And I think this course coming in now from UEFA, this soon to be UEFA B goalie licence, will help. And it's really just to almost bed in the ideas of what the UEFA A licence is, and it just gives them that wee experience of thinking differently. So rather than, I think a lot of coaches think towards the game.
Yep.
So they just put on a session for session's sake, and then they'll, whatever it comes of it may come of it. Whereas now what we are saying is, no, can you actually go and look at the game, whether it's a game just being or whether it's a game coming up, and what can you see that helps your goalie to then build your practice that way? And it's just about probably just starting them to think on that process.
Yeah,
is the main part of this new course. And at the same time, we're hosting a UEFA study visit of seven nations, I think it is
seven
now.
Seven nations, yeah.
So seven nations coming, first of all, coming to speak about goalkeeping coach education in terms of this new B licence, but also I think this is the first one where they'll see a live course. So it'll be good for us to showcase.
So the course is UEFA Share, as it's now called, as Fraser said, UEFA Study Group, they're intermingled. So it's been, we're talking about the planning earlier, the planning's been tough, yeah, because the two of them have very much intermingled, and it's what do we do when with these kind of seven nations, as well as, that's a song, is it not? Is that not the White Stripes, Seven Nations Army?
It keeps well playing in my head every time you see Seven Nations.
As well as the UEFA, the new UEFA goalkeeping B licence.
Yeah. It'll be good. It's a good addition, because there was a fair gap between our own. Don't get me wrong, our own national licence was good, but I think this just increases that a wee bit to get it closer to the A, so there is a better stepping stone into that UEFA licence. Because the UEFA, I did find it a massive challenge in terms of the way it was getting you to think and interact, and you ended up sometimes coming away from the goalie, forgetting about the goalie, because you were trying to get the outfield part to run.
Yep.
And you're going, no, it's a goalie, I forgot about that. So it does allow them to just get the bedding in process right.
And the balance on it.
Yeah.
I think it touches on the wee bit of CPDs done at the weekend there as well, didn't it? It was more on the watching the game and analysing.
So if you take that, for example, so what we would say would be, right, what are you seeing in the goalies there, and then what would you structure from that? What would you, you know, for example, the two of them are very different. The French goalie was very high up, and she ended up making good one-on-one saves because of her positioning. The German goalie was very deep, she got into problems. So you're then going, right, how could I construct something to help that German goalie feel more comfortable playing higher? And you're trying to recreate those wee scenarios, and it doesn't take a lot. I mean, you can do it within a group. If you've got a group of four or five goalies, it's how you can be quite cute and try and design something that recreates that tiny wee bit of the game, and then how it filters back into the bigger game. But the main thing is just about flipping, you know, rather than working towards the game, can you work the opposite way?
Back the way.
Aye.
When's it launch? When are you live?
September, the something or other, middle of September,
16th,
I think.
16th. Yeah. I think for our course, I think the UEFA B licence starts the 16th, 17th, and then the study groups on to the 18th.
Good luck with that one, lads.
Oh, we'll get there.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.